I've been away from this, the circumstance. It's just to explain myself. I've been away from the circumstance of daily practice and practice with the community for some time due to circumstances with taking care of my family. And so to come back to this situation where people are practicing together and there's a kind of, I guess you'd call it kind of a momentum or an energy of people sitting down together has been very, very useful for me. And as I mentioned before, I want to thank all the residents here for keeping the practice life of Jikoji going. So my thought is that I'd like to stay with this elemental or simple activity that we do, and let's talk about that. When I was young, I'm from Wisconsin, and when I was young, I used to go fishing with my father and my older brother, and sometimes my younger sister, who just died this year, would also join us. Not too much, but she liked to hang out in the boat. She didn't like the fishing so much. So we had a nice big aluminum rowboat kind of thing. There was a motor on the back too, and we'd go out fishing and kind of cast. My brother liked to cast, you know, where you kind of wind it up and then you cast these lures. He really loved to do that. Just loved to throw them and see if he could get a good long cast. And we'd fish with worms and so on and so forth. But the main thing is that we were able to be in this kind of boat, this kind of container, this little container, in a beautiful setting in a lake, and we had to be quiet together. Does that sound familiar? We had to be quiet. If we weren't quiet, if we talked and chatted and moved around and stuff, well, the fish would kind of, you know, sense us and kind of move away. So we had to be quiet and still somewhat together. But we did that together. It was very, reflecting back on that, I think that was one of my first sort of tastes or flavors of kind of a practice mind, a mind of just being quiet and still. So I think our practice can be compared to a kind of a boat. We have this boat of practice. This person over here at the end, his name is Greg. His Dharma name is Kushu Koka. Koka is his public name, Koka. Koka means assenting or confirming mist or haze. That's the sort of public name that he has. But he has a private name called Kushu, right? Kushu. Ku means emptiness, shunyata, if you know that term, or voidness, kind of without characteristics. And shu means boat. His private name is emptiness boat. Do you remember? I think it's a very appropriate name for Greg, don't you think? He's a very modest and almost self-effacing person, and yet he has a kind of He's a container of he's ready, and he's a container for this for our practice experience here, and to help other people. He is a good boat. An empty boat is one that's ready for duty, you could say. It's ready to take, to help people, to take people from one place to another.
Mike, I never told you this, but one reason the boat is empty is I get very seasick very easily.
Down in the pond, we have a pond down here, and the pond is, well, it's kind of weedy right now, but we do have, we still have a boat, don't we?
Hmm?
Still.
With one paddle. Going to circle.
There's a statement I love from Dogen that I'd like to read to you about our practice. Dogen says, if you would just understand the wild birds and monkeys of your mind, your thoughts, your emotions, the wild monkeys, the birds of your mind, and take a backward step, you would be unified. And in that place, you will turn while being turned. If we can just come to meet our minds as they are, the wild, uncontrollable qualities of our mind, the monkeys, the birds, the internal dialogue, the chatter, the emotional production, the likes and the dislikes, the production of kind of self-interest, our selfing process. If we would just come to meet that, see that, understand that, and then take a backward step, we would, in taking that backward step, we would become, in a sense, complete or whole. We would become unified. And in that place of unity, then we're able to both turn while being turned. In other words, from that place of unity, from that place of after taking a backward step, we can turn in the sense of we can affect ourselves and the world. We can actually be empowered or have the energy or have the insight or have the intention to actually be real, or to be clear, or to affect the world, to be compassionate, to understand, to be with another person or another thing. We could turn, and we can be turned. In other words, we can be from that place of unity, we can be affected, we can be taught, we're able to receive, we're able to hear the cries of the world, we're able to hear the message from other people and from our own hearts. We're able to be turned, we're pliable, we're able to be taught, we're able to be affected, we're sensitive, we're attuned. So that's Dogen's encouragement for us in our practice activity. Coming back to this boat metaphor. Greg, could you get me a little water, please? Yeah. A little water?
Water, open it.
Thank you, my throat's dry. When I used to be out in a boat with my family, I remember often I'd like to be in the front of the boat. My dad would have a motor in the back, and we'd go to the fishing place. We lived in Madison. There were many lakes around Madison, and also we had a place north, and a smaller lake. And anyway, he would be in the back, and we'd have our lunch and everything and all our fishing equipment. But I like to be in the very front of the boat because I kind of, see where we were going. I'd like to hang out over the bow as the motor was going and the boat was cutting through the water. So I would kind of, with most of my body in the boat, I would kind of lean out over the front of the boat, and instead of looking ahead, often I would look like straight down, and the water right in front of the boat is actually quite still. It's actually unless it's real choppy or something like that, the water is very, very still. And yet, right behind that point is all this activity of the boat and then cutting through thank you. Thank you very much. Cutting through the Dharma realm, cutting through all this karma and all this wake of our activity and our thought. But at that precious time that I was out ahead of it, there was none of that. There was just the stillness of the water before it was disturbed. That's a very clear memory to me. I was a little bit before my experience, you could say. Or I was a little bit before my mind, or a little bit before my body. And in that beforeness, I was able to taste this very still quality before things were interrupted. I think this backward step that is this kind of hallmark of, Dogen talks about this quite a bit, this backward step, is could also be said, it could be before our production, or before our intrusion of our personal concerns, before our, I don't want to say consciousness, but before our self-making. I think that beforeness is, in a sense, the same as a backward step. When we come to sit, when we come to meditate, we invariably sort of, could you close the door, Greg? I think we're getting kind of walked through here. When we come to meditate like this, we come with, well, we come with whatever we have. We come with our concerns. We come with our mental state, whatever our mental state is. We come with our however our body is, and we become quiet and we become still in this kind of format that we have, and we see what's happening. And in the process of seeing what's happening, we have the opportunity, or at least the invitation, to drop off that production, and to just be with mind as mind, or with body as body, or with feelings as feelings, or with a sensation as a sensation, or with the sound of people walking by as just the sound of walking by, without commentary, without judgment. That mind might arise that says, I like this or I don't like that. But in the midst of practice, we have the invitation or the opportunity to be before that, to be before those judgments arise, or before that critical mind arises, or the commentator comes in and says, I like this, I don't like this, I think this is stupid, I'm bored, I'm trying to follow my breath, but I'd rather be working on my computer, playing a game or something. That mind arises, but nevertheless, the situation that we ourselves have chosen to put ourselves in, to actually come to a place where we can stop and be quiet and be still, we have the invitation to be before that. That germinal state before that, that you might say is pure. At least it's pure of our story or our intrusion. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Do you think this is a... is possible? Do you think we're doing this? Yeah, this is your first time practicing, so I gave you just a little bit of meditation instruction, and I said, please just follow your breath. Well, how did that go?
It's difficult. My mind sort of tend to wander, get distracted. Yeah, it was for a little bit, for a short period of time, I was able to do it, and it was something else that I certainly don't usually take the time to experience. But that was, unfortunately, the minority of the time. Most of the time, I was trying, and I would get a few breaths in, and then I would get distracted.
I think if you took a poll, you would find something similar. Whether people practiced a long time or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's part of it. What's usually recommended is that we when distraction or thoughts arise, that rather than to push them away or subjugate them in a sense with the regime of, say, follow your breath, that we actually kind of broaden our field of awareness so that we include, kind of like a gracious host, we include the sensation of people walking by, which we hear, and the sensation in our knee and our scattering thoughts. We include them within that kind of repertoire or field of just being with our breath. So even though you may think you're losing your breath, it's like you can convert that and actually say that your breath is being more generous. Mm-hmm. Your breath is always with you, right? So otherwise you'd be dead. Your breath is always with you. So your breath is being more generous, and it's including all these sensations, like a good host, like a kind of gracious host that has a few kind of good guests, but it's also has a few kind of wild guests that come in. And, yeah. What are they called? Party crashers? that come in and, but they're made for trouble. But nevertheless, a good host says, oh, please sit down and have some food. So that kind of attitude, that kind of friendly attitude toward your distraction will actually kind of give your practice energy to come back to your breath and to settle into your breath and to let things just be as they are without intruding. But it's hard. Sometimes it's hard because we're used to being kind of we're used to believing that we can take charge. And practice is a little more expansive than just taking charge. It's kind of opening up to every experience while taking care of, while being present. Would like to comment?
I guess that generosity of when we're sitting and working to stay with the breath for as long as possible and being generous about how that is, how we're doing or not, and what else comes up, and doing it with other people, that it becomes a lot easier to be generous to others when you're
generous to yourself.
Generous with just the breath, just being generous with the breath and how inclusive it is. It that's how it ripples out, I think, in the day. When you respect your own breath, it's easier to respect the breath of the guy next to you. And no matter how different they look, like if they got four eyes instead of two. But I have.
You mean he wears glasses?
What about? Or if it's a homeless guy in the street, it's like, because it's hard to know how to engage something when you're open. When you have preferences, you know how you're going to engage. No, stay away. You know, you know what your reaction is. But if you're generous about it, then it's like, how do I welcome this homeless guy on the street? How do I interact with him? And it's still
you might have to listen to him, or you might have to actually see him instead of just, you know, without looking at him, drop that coin in there. Yeah.
So it opens up a whole lot of potentiality. It doesn't give any answers because you still have to meet it and then discover what's there.
I discovered something the other week, a week or two ago. I had, unbeknownst or not being aware, I had been pretty tight and pretty hard and directed in my sitting. And I've been struggling for a few months now. So I practiced softening, and I literally I used the technique of softening in my chest and being aware of my body and being aware of the tension in my body, and the act of softening really incredibly improved the concentration. I mean, I didn't expect it to be that way, but things got a lot less distracting and clearer and more present just by the act of softening. I was surprised.
The recommendations for posture is that you make your back strong, pretty upright, aligned with gravity, and the back of your torso and the back of your head as well. Almost like we face a wall, so it's almost like the line or the wall of our back meets or is a parallel to the line of the wall. So a wall meets a wall, you could say. But in between that wall, it's kind of like a sandwich. In between that wall is softness. So if you can make your back and the back of your head strong, almost very noble, upright, not without being tense, then, like Chris mentioned, you can relax your abdomen, the whole front of your torso, and relax your face as well. Almost swoon, in a sense, like, and this front of you can be not only soft, but it can be open. Like it can almost disappear. It can open and spread out and be generous, be gracious.
You know, if you play an instrument, or, you know, frequently I'll find in playing the musical instrument I play, if I'm really concentrating hard, all of a sudden I realize my hands are incredibly tense, and you know, and I don't even know it, then I have to, you know, consciously relax. And I think I've been really doing that in Zazen, tensing up like that. I mean, it's like you say a generous host, I'm like a Nazi, I'm like, you will sit here and you will sit there and you out, and rather than like, you know, like, hey baby, come on in, whatever, you know. Yeah. And it's like a different thing, and I've been doing it for so long, this really, you know, wanting so hard to do it right, or you know, to do the Zazen right, or you know, it's like the harder I tried, the further away I went. So
Katagiri Roshi said that there's two approaches to practice, the left hand way and the right hand way. And the right hand way is forceful engagement. So you recognize that you have you've got work to do, or you've got to tame this beast or this monkey mind or whatever, and you, with your resolution, with your will, you're forcefully engaging. And there is times in everyone's practice, but according to the temperament, when it's appropriate to forcefully engage. In other words, just to find the object of meditation. Nominally, it's in Zen tradition, in the Soto Zen tradition, it's nothing. It's nothing in the sense of everything. It's nominally, we bring attention to our breath and also to our posture. And posture doesn't mean just how upright you are, how correct things are, but it also means a sense of being located, of being, okay, this is a body, this body is located here, I have a sense of being present here and now. That's part of posture as well. So Katagiri Roshi said the right hand way is to forcefully engage yourself, to find the object of meditation, to stay with the object of meditation, and to be a kind of, it's like training a puppy, you know, you love the puppy, you really care for the puppy, but you've got to train that puppy to, what, first they piss on newspaper, right? They put out newspaper, something like that. And then what do? You put the newspaper outside or something? You train them to go outside and wait. And, yeah. But before that, it's a mess, you know? So you have to forcefully engage in training that puppy or training that child or training that mind. That's the right-hand way. The left-hand way is what we were talking about. You recognize, you actually become friendly with the process. So you become friendly with what you might consider to be an obstruction or a difficulty in your practice. Whatever it is that arises in your practice, a distracted mind, a sensation, you convert it and you expand your intention, your attention or your awareness to include it. And you convert it from a kind of adversary or a problem into an ally. It's actually the fact that you were aware of your wild mind means you were paying attention to your mind. Mm-hmm. Only a meditator would be aware that they're not meditating. You had an insight into your state of mind. And you convert that, and you've made that distraction, you've made that problem your marker of return, or your marker of awareness, or your marker of presence. So that's the left hand way. So according to the how you're doing that day when you come to practice, you might have to do the right-hand path. path where you actually forcefully engage, and other times you can be generous and allow the whole thing to unfold and be with it with friendliness. I think the important element of that we can return to is this sense of this backward step, or out in front of the bow of the boat, whatever metaphor you want to use. What is that? I mean, when we come to practice, we come with the whole momentum of our life. It's called samstava in Sanskrit. It is our stream of life, the momentum of our life, the great drama or opera of our life. And when we stop, it's almost like, you know those cartoons where a bunch of people are rushing along and someone in front stops, and then all the other people kind of and sometimes they all fall down. Where's that from? Laurel and Hardy or Three Stooges or something like that? But we're like that I think something similar might happen to us when we come to sit. We think, okay, I'm going to meditate. But we're carrying all this stuff. We sit down, wow, have I got a pile to deal with of mental production, of emotional. I didn't realize I was emotionally charged. I didn't realize I had this and this and this and this and this and this and this to think about.
I think you asked how we feel about that backward step. So for me, when I feel myself get to that place in meditation, it feels like a very kind of simplified way in the moment to get to a place that I remember kind of, I have a metaphor for, that when I became a mother, and I remember kind of wondering, I remember at some point I got to the place where my kids were old enough to go out and get disturbed in the world, and I think it was another mother said to me, you know, like, do you remember, I don't know that my mother ever did this, maybe that's why I didn't know, but what I learned is all I had to do was be at home, sit, bring my child on my lap, let my child have all the feelings that they had, and say everything's going to be all right. And the amazing thing is, it always worked. It always worked. It was like astonishing. It was like this light went on about, wow. So I think
being at home, that's the first thing you said. You were at home. You were the home.
I was sitting in a chair. The child would come in. I put the child on my lap. No matter what that child was going through, how dramatic, how emotional, it's like, you know, my body could take it all in and ground it, and I could say everything will be all right. You know, even though maybe I didn't believe it would be, it didn't matter. Because the child felt that everything would be all right. And so, to me, that's like an emotional metaphor for when I sit in Zazen and I get to that place. It's just this kind of crystallized, clear, you know, like, there is no form, there is no emotional humanness about it. But it has that same shape of, like, I get to a place where I can hold everything and it's all right. But I can be in a place that's completely
stable.
Yeah, and clear present. And present and
at
nothing
home.
Empty.
Basically at
empty.
Home.
Basically yeah. Empty, you know, yeah.
in a sense, what we're doing is kind of stupid. It's kind of we're very, very fast, you know. We can make deals with ourselves, and we can trick ourselves, and we can tell ourselves what's going on, and we can mentally manipulate our world, and we're really good at it. We are. We're good at making trouble in that way, making selfing. When we sit, when we do this practice, or any practice that's comparable to this, when we stop in this way, we kind of become, in a sense, stupid. We become kind of intentionally stupid, in the sense of this backward step. We come to the place where we're before our thoughts, and then we can be a home, then we can be a place, we can be the receptor for the crying child that is coming in, or the thought, or the emotional, that little emotional knot that you didn't know was there, that you discovered. We can be the host for all of that. If we're willing to be quiet enough and still enough and stupid enough, in the sense of not trying to manipulate it, not trying to lay a commentary on top of it, not trying to make a deal with it, or not trying to use our mental energy to distract ourselves, entertain ourselves, divert ourselves from issue, the real issue at hand. That's all a kind of intelligence or smartness or savvy. And the invitation of practice is to kind of not be intelligent or smart or fast in that way, but to stop and be slow and be before that production, or maybe behind that production.